Good afternoon, folks. This is Maurice from A Handyman's Haven. We're transmitting today in the A Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. It's good to be with you. A great day out there. It was nice having the rain this past couple days. Many people got disrupted because of it, but at least it keeps the dust down a little bit during our time period. Today, our production engineer is none other than a young man by the name of Kent, and I do have a guest with us today, which is our daughter from Albuquerque. She's in Tucson. We can talk a little bit more about that later. So welcome, Teresa. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you, Dad. It's good to be with you again at the radio station.
Very good. So we'll get on with the program. A Handyman's Haven, located in Tucson. Address is 1724 South 6th Avenue. Our phone number is 520-624-7200. That address puts you six blocks south of 22nd Street, and we're the big yellow building on the west side of the street before you get to 29th Street. Our hours of operation in Tucson is from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Saturday, except for various holidays throughout the year. Our website is none other than www, the World Wide Web, and the first part of it is info, I-N-F-O, and then it's at, and the word looks like ahandymanshaven.com. Since handyman's is normally a apostrophe S, a possessive name, but just remember it's ahandymanshaven.com, and you'll be able to type it correctly, and that's .com after that. We have a Green Valley location, which is located in the northern part of Green Valley. If you come off of I-19, you could exit the Duval Mine Road exits, and from there continually stay in the left-hand lane as you come off of the exit ramp as you proceed southbound at that time period, and then you'll come through the east-west street that's there. As you transition into that street, immediately move again to the left-hand lane and take the first intersection down the frontage road and then go down to the Duval Mine Roads. The address in Green Valley is 125 West Calle de las Tiendas, Suite 103 Alpha. The hours of operation are about 8 a.m. In the morning, 8:30 in the morning to about 4 p.m. in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. They are closed Saturday and Sunday in Green Valley and for various other activities. But if you happen to be using the Green Valley phone number, which is 520-369-4858, and nobody is able to answer that because of activities going on, it will automatically revert to the Tucson location and will be able to answer it in Tucson and be able to address the issues that you are calling about. The website is the same, ahandymanshaven.com, from that standpoint. For those of you that have called the store and mentioned that you had listened to our program, the Hammer Time Radio Show on KVOI, those that may have come in, we did have several people come in this past week again. And for all the listeners that are on the listening to the radio program today, we thank you very much for participating in those types of activities as we try to address the issues that you may have. And believe me, there are a lot of issues that come up periodically, and they just happen to be with miscommunications most of the time than anything else. One of the major discussions we had with one of the listeners to the program happens to do with laminate flooring, and in the process of discussing laminate flooring with him, and I'll take up some particulars a little while later, he indicated that one of the customers at the contractor that he had, that they wanted to put laminate flooring over Saltillo tile. And right away, you could probably suspect eyebrows would go up. Saltillo tile, as most of us know, is sort of a handmade tile. It's sort of warpy or bumpy or whatever you want to call it. It has different types of edges, depends on the size of the grout line, and there doesn't seem to be anything consistent from one tile to the next tile, except for the consistency that makes it bumpy and maybe not quite out of square. They're about 11 inches or so per side as far as that goes. And so the customer was concerned because they were getting ready to sell their home, and they did not think that Saltillo tile would be an appropriate tile in order to sell their home, even though it was a ranch-style house from that standpoint. So the comment came around to putting laminate flooring over Saltillo tile. And anybody who has been involved with laminate flooring recognize the fact that there are some stiff criteria about the warranty issues associated with laminate flooring, in that the flatness of the floor needs to be pretty exact. It cannot distribute more than probably a 16th of an inch over a period of time, and that is one condition that the laminate flooring manufacturers love, because there's hardly any floor that is perfectly flat throughout the construction trade. So what is the value of the warranty? That's in the eyes of the beholder and what you want to believe it to be. So what they did, the contractor suggested, let's get a couple boxes of laminate flooring, which is about 25 square feet per box, and they laid it down on the flooring. It was a self-locking type system with a pad available attached to the back of the laminate flooring. And with that in mind, they walked on this presentation they had there for several months, and in the process they found out that the laminate flooring did not crack, it did not separate, the self-clicking joints did not break apart or transmit down the line or whatever it may happen to be, and he indicated to me at the present time that that flooring has been down for over 7 years at the present time, and they've had no remedial problems with it at all. So I thought that was pretty interesting when you take a look at what the warranty issues are on laminate flooring. There are a couple other, there's one other major warranty issue, and we'll discuss that shortly. We're coming up for the end of our first segment. We are transmitting in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. And we'll continue with the laminate flooring after the break. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I am Maurice from A Handyman's Haven. We are transmitting today in the A Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. So just prior to the break, we started a conversation on laminate flooring, and there are a lot of things associated with laminate flooring that if you plan on utilizing it, which is an excellent floor, by the way, but there are some other things during the installation process that you truly ought to be aware of. And I'll go over some of them, as well as some of the items, or at least one or two of the items that we found on the websites. Not the websites, but the search engines, and trying to research idiosyncrasies associated with laminate flooring and what some of the so-called experts may be talking about. Laminate flooring basically is about 85% wood product. It's manufactured in a specific manner, but the coloring or the presentation that's on the top of a laminate flooring is just like a laminate countertop. It's no more than a sheet of paper with an image on it, and that image is placed over several plies of type of material. Most of it's high-density fiberboard, or HDF as we call it, which HDF is nothing more than grinding up a bunch of wood products and then putting the appropriate glues to them and then putting under high pressure and heat and sealing it all together. It wouldn't be medium-density fiberboard. They basically use high-density, but that's another type of fiberboard that's also available and quite prevalent. So as you lay the flooring and you're using a self-locking system, which is acceptable, I do question if the pad is attached. I do know from a consumer standpoint, if you're going to do it yourself, that you would much rather lay one product instead of two products. But there is a slight deficiency associated with a pad that is attached to laminate flooring. and I'll discuss that shortly. So when you lay laminate flooring, there is a criteria after you start sliding the pieces together that you do need to have a gap between the flooring itself and the wall structure that it may be approaching. And with that being in mind, up to about 20 feet, that the gap needs to be a minimum of 1/4 inch on all four sides of the floor or the walls or the structure of the room, whatever it happens to be. So basically speaking, in total, you have a half inch gap on, say, the east-west direction, and you would have a half inch spacing on the north-south direction. One half of that would be, 1/4 would be on each wall structure if you happen to have a four-wall system. So that's generally the case when you do lay the laminate flooring. And that's because of the wood product is going to expand and contract throughout a daily basis. As we've talked in the past, just as a reminder, sometimes homes will expand and contract over 20 times a day. As the temperature varies, the humidity varies, the heat varies, or the cold varies, or the wind, or whatever it may happen to be. And it's also a function, obviously, of how you take care of your house. How much moisture is in your home? Do you have dehumidifiers? If you run the heaters in the wintertime, it tends to dry out the home. If you run your refrigeration, it also tends to reduce the humidity and dry out. That's why we have water distribution systems on the downside of the refrigeration systems or the air conditioning systems from that standpoint. So that gap is pretty important, up to 20 feet. If your room is longer or a hallway is longer from that standpoint, whatever it may happen to be, a bigger room, you may want to think of, say, of 1/8 inch more in spacing per 5 feet. It is proportional, so to speak, and so you could figure out whatever you may need from that standpoint. So if you happen to have a 20-foot room, and you have 1/4 inch, and you go to from a 10-foot room, you go to a 20-foot room, now you're going to need a half inch. And the question comes up is, how do you cover up that half inch on the other end of the wall structure that you're going to have that half inch? So you may have to double up on your baseboard molding from that standpoint. Or you may be able to use a standard baseboard molding, which is about 7/16 or so. Some of it's 9/16, but it varies. And you may have to use some quarter round, or you could use a tall baseboard piece of molding and then put a similar one that's less in height in order to give you a very appropriate and good-looking presentation from your baseboard. So those are some of the things to consider when you're laying laminate flooring down in order to protect yourself. If you miss out, when you do that on occasion and you find out that all of a sudden you have a little hump in your laminate flooring, go right towards the baseboard and try to find out where it is, open it up, and see what's happening. Obviously, the flooring is expanded into the wall structure, and it's going to create a little hump. I do know from personal experience, I laid flooring in a room many years ago, and in the summertime, we had a nice mountain range on the floor, and in the wintertime, when it dried up, we had a flat floor. Turns out that it expanded, and as I looked and saw what I had accomplished, it wasn't laminate flooring in this case, it was parquet flooring, but it was right up against the wall structure, and that's what created the little mountain ranges on the floor. So keep that in mind. Moisture is a detriment to laminate flooring. I do know that the laminate flooring that we have at A. Handyman's Haven, that in itself we've actually soaked it for 3 and 4 months, and the flooring maintained its intact operation, never delaminated from that standpoint, but it did expand it. So it indicates that it did accept water. Moisture expanded, even though it had non-water permeable mechanism or a water repellent mechanism in the HDF that it was set up to be. So keep that in mind when it comes to that. One of the other things that my daughter and I found on the web is that they indicated that laminate flooring should never be put underneath cabinetry. your base cabinetry in your kitchen or wherever you're going to have that. And I do remember taking a course by one of the major manufacturers of laminate flooring, and that was exactly the same thing that the instructor had said. The course on the day that we had that had about 30 different flooring contractors in there, and that was one of the things that they all gobbled up, that laminate flooring never goes underneath cabinetry. So I questioned the instructor as to what was the reason, because you could put laminate flooring underneath refrigerators. They're pretty heavy. You can put them under stoves, which produce a lot of heat. You can put them under dishwashers from that standpoint, because when you start removing these appliances, you do not want to have a lip in the front of them to prevent you from removing them. So if you do not put the laminate flooring or tile flooring, whatever it is, all the way to the back walls of your structure, then you are going to have a little lip. So if you do stop and you happen to redo a lot of things and you work with the footprint, you're going to have to create a little bridge system, so to speak, from the front to the back. I know in our personal home, our refrigerator sits on a wood platform. That's so we can slide it back and forth, because everything was in position when we decided to lay Saltillo tile. Of course, Saltillo tile is about an inch high from that standpoint, and that's something to remember concerning that. Well, I see we've picked up a phone caller, Philip. Appreciate you being on the live line today, and what may I assist you with?
Yes, let's assume someone buys some high-quality laminated cabinets, but the contractor or installer has switched it out with ply particle board underneath. How would they be able to detect the difference?
Well, if they're laminated cabinets all the way through from that standpoint, and I will be talking about that later with one of our companies, hopefully I can get to it, you're not going to be able to determine what it is, whether it's medium-density fiberboard, high-density fiberboard, whether it's oriented strand board, whether it's particle board, any one of the engineering products or plywood, you're not going to be able to determine unless you want to cut the cabinet open and figure out what's underneath there. I take it you have some concern over some of the engineering products that may be used. Is that correct? Apparently he's no longer on the phone. He got dropped off. So, Philip, if you'd like to call back, please do, and we'll try to figure out what's going on within the phone system. So anyway, his question is quite important. The answer is, last week, those who listened to the program, I had a major discussion concerning particle board versus plywood, and the summation of the entire a document that I had said that it's in the eyes of the consumer, the customer, and the contractor on what's appropriate for the person to use within their home. That's basically what it comes to about to. I'm not going to come about the instruction again with what we talked about or the format, but if you have any further questions concerning that, give us a call at A Handyman's Haven. I do have a document there that I can provide for you. I don't mind mailing it out if that happens to be important. That discusses particle board versus particle board versus plywoods. So, getting back to laminate flooring, we talked about the spacing and how you can guide when you have a large room from that standpoint, and keep that in mind, especially under the any type of water you may happen to have. So you can put laminate flooring under refrigerators. You can put it under stoves. You can put it under dishwashers. The main thing when you lay your flooring, if you do have an option, whether it's laminate flooring or tile, whatever it is, that do take your tile or your flooring product all the way to the walls, leave the appropriate gaps, and then put all your appliances on that. So we did talk about refrigerator stoves and dishwashers. One of the things that is interesting is that when you research the web for information on that, you'll find that, and we did at least, found a flat statement that says you are never supposed to put laminate flooring underneath cabinetry. And this is a subject, as I mentioned, came up during a discussion in the training seminar that I had gone to. And when it was all said and done, the instructor says, well, the main reason you can't do it is because you nailed the cabinets to the floor. Well, I don't know where he came from, but there are floors in many homes today that are concrete floors. And to nail them to the concrete floor, you're either using a 22 or a 27 caliber gun that drives the nails through the whatever you're going to drive it from to into the flooring, or you're going to hammer them in with wedge-type nails in order to make it stick, or you're going to glue them down or whatever it happens to be. That is so far from the truth. Cabinets, the base cabinets, are basically designed to be attached to the wall structure that sits behind the cabinetry. And that's where you may screw it in or nail it, however you want to accomplish that with various other techniques. So be leery of those type of statements that you find. If you have any questions, give us a call. And we'll try to field those questions for you and give you the straight answer as we know it from that standpoint. So I talked about various aspects of that. When the contractor was talking to this customer about what to do about the flooring, you know, she indicated again that she wanted to sell the house in down the line, but she thought that anybody that was interested in purchasing a home may not like Saltillo tile, and if that is the case, you wanted to cover it up with some laminate flooring. So due to the undulations of laminate flooring, what they basically accomplished is that they bought two boxes, laid it down, walked on it, as I mentioned before, walked on it for a period of time and found out there was no destruction at all. So that's what they basically did, and as I mentioned, it's still in existence today over 7 years, and is functioning very properly from that standpoint. Well, we've completed the second segment of our program in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. And Kent's ready to flip the switches, so go for it, Kent. I got the power, we say. I'm Maurice from A. Handyman's Haven on this beautiful day in paradise. We're transmitting in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to enter the conversation like one of our listeners just did not too long ago, please give us a call on 790-2040. That's area code 520-790-2040. And we're entertain and discuss your question concerning that. So one of the other things that we do at A. Handyman's Haven is we do handle regular household doors, whether it's the front doors, side doors, back doors, interweaving doors, special safe doors, private room doors, you name it, we can get most doors from that standpoint. We have had some very interesting conversations with some listeners over doors that they've had on their existing home and sent out referrals to various contractors that took a look at their homes, and it had been very interesting on some of the things that they reported back. So we do specialty doors, too. We talked about some of that in the past where we put special glass in doors, even though the glass is not available from the fabrication facility. We can handle that at A. Handyman's Haven. We can proceed to do all the special routering it needs to frame the doors from that standpoint. One of the other things I'd like to talk about today is one of our newest vendors that we have. It's a company out of the Texas region where we purchase cabinets, and they do have quite a selection of cabinetry. They have over 30 different styles of cabinets available. I thought that this was rather interesting and unique from that standpoint. And along with that, 30 styles sounds a little excessive. Along with that, they have over 1,800 different units that go with each style. So you can just imagine the production facilities attached with keeping up with the cabinet requests from this standpoint. They do have three major plants in the Houston area in order to produce the cabinetry. So I like to talk about some of them, and they may be very interesting to you, and they may be able to supply some of the things that you may need within the cabinetry that you would be requesting. So the basic frames or the basic structure of cabinets are normally twofold. We either say they have a framed cabinet, which means on the front of the side panels there is a solid dimensional lumbered frame system that holds the doors and drawer systems in place from that standpoint. That's the prettiest part of the cabinet. All the rest is sort of hidden. The side panels are hidden. The toe-kick is hidden. The back panels are hidden. The top is hidden. The floors are sort of hidden until you open up the cabinet door. But those are the two basic styles. The frame cabinetry can come in what's labeled as standard overlay, and that is that the door itself overlaps the frame 1/2 inch from that standpoint. So if you have a 12-inch opening, your cabinet door should be somewhere in the vicinity of 13 inches, and the way they get the door to operate properly is through the hinging mechanism. So the Blum Company, which is an Austrian company, they have designed way back when what they call a compact hinge. It comes in various overlap, would be a common term, provision. And depending upon how much your cabinet door overlaps your face frame, will determine whether it would be today acceptable as a standard overlap, or it could be what's considered a full overlap in that the door will approach the end of the cabinet size itself. I sort of like to say that when the Europeans developed their faceless cabinetry, or frameless cabinetry is a word, or a full excess cabinet, the Americans came along and produced the full overlay hinge, and that's what accommodates the same look, so to speak, as a European look. The European look, the spacing between the cabinet doors or the drawer structures of that is probably about 1/8 inch. And in reality, the hinge is so designed on a non-framed cabinet, a European cabinet, that where the door, the first thing it does is move away from the side panel and then rotates out. It has to do that, otherwise you're going to find that the door is going to crash into the edge of the side panel. A very prominent engineering feature from that standpoint. So getting back to the Lido cabinet company I talked about earlier, they basically have two woods that they would make their face frames out of on a frame cabinet, and that would be maple and oak. And along with that, they have 10 stained colors associated with that staining of the wood. You can get painted colors along the same way with that. So, and they have about 10 different painted colors available. So, well within the idea of what you may want for your color spectrum within your kitchen. They also have a thermofoil cabinet. I know that the listener that just called recently talked about a laminate cabinet. There is a minor difference between a laminate cabinet and a thermofoil cabinet. But a thermofoil cabinet is a piece of foil, as we call, that has various colorings in it. It has various striping or other types of things. It's nothing more than a photographic picture, sort of like a laminate flooring, that is impressed onto a solid surface, or whether it could be a surface that has a recessed panel or a raised panel in it. It's used with intense heat and high pressure in order to ensure that the rigid vinyl, as it's called, or foil, is impressed to the structure that it's going to support. There are 21 colors and designs available in that with this one company. Another thing that many people do not know is you take a look at, if you happen to have a spa, an acrylic big bathtub that may hold two people or may hold one or may hold three or four or five, whatever it happens to be. That's all done under a heating and a vacuum system. So they heat up these big, huge sheets of acrylic or foil, as it's called. And as the foil sags due to all the heat, they turn up the vacuum system, and then they slowly lower the big sheet of plastic, as one person would call it, down. It provides a seal against the wall structures of the spa, and it sucks it down into position in a matter of seconds. Extremely impressive. It does make a little bit of noise as the vacuum system is doing its job from that standpoint. So in the thermal foil, area, this cabinet company, Lido, has 21 different colors and designs available, which surely develop a lot of possibilities for what you may like in your kitchen or any place that you like to use your cabinetry, bathrooms, foyer, craft room, etc. They have what they call a true touch cabinet, and that is very similar to the thermofoil, except it's made with laminate in this case, which is normally an acrylic-based product. The pictures that are in there and the touch to the cabinetry is what we call an embossed area. It does have sort of rigid lines on it and various things of that nature, which gives you more of a wood texture, and even though it's a plastic look from that standpoint. They basically use engineered wood from that area in order to place the laminate or the True Touch embossed laminate onto the material in order to accomplish that. It's a lot of times labeled as a thermo-fused and on engineering products, which normally come in 4x8 sheets in various sizes and thicknesses. The color limitation or the styles are only limited to 6 in that, which surely gives you a certain amount of opportunity to select whatever you want. The other method of developing the styles and rails and the cabinet doors or drawer fronts would be using laminate. There's only 6 colors available in that, and it can either be a smooth laminate to the touch, or it can be textured laminate to the touch. So those are some of the things that are very important from that standpoint with this company. So we do have a lot of flexibility. The lead time for ordering these cabinets could be as much as 8 weeks. So if you're interested in that, come on down and see us. Plan ahead a little bit. And if you come in and say you want to have the cabinets immediately, we could sort of say that we're unable to do that with this company. But by planning ahead and doing all your homework that you need, that'll give you the opportunity to get what you like and deserve with the proper presentation that you're looking for. Well, we're coming to the end of our third segment on AM 1030, The Voice with your trusted local news and talk in the A Handyman's Haven Radio Studio. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I am Maurice, transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven Radio Studio on AM 1030, The Voice with your trusted local news and talk. Somebody talked to me a while back and wanted to know what AM 1030 meant, and I thought that was rather interesting. So I'll just sort of expound upon that. There are two normally transmission medias for radio. One is FM and one is AM, and it has to do with the frequency that is transmitting from. And 1030 happens to be the designated frequency on the AM band of radio. FM band has a different number sequence, and most of the time you'll also see a decimal point attached to those types of things. Like a sister station here or a brother station, whatever your means may happen to be, to AM 1030 is the groove on 106.3 on the FM band of frequency. So that's what that really means, folks. I'd like to talk a little bit about now, and most of us have done this throughout our life when we're remodeling, is that we're looking for a request for quotation. And, of course, when you get big words like this, so to speak, they're normally shortened to an acronym like RFQs or Romeo Foxtrot Quebec, you know, however you want to label that. As most of us know, when we read a lot of manuals today, the acronyms that are used, you may have to have a separate dictionary or create your own to figure out what all these acronyms mean, and so you can understand the content of the article that you're trying to read. So we've all called up contractors, business people or something, would like to have a quote on, in our case, cabinets, doors, whatever it happens to be, and we give those out daily from that standpoint, either telephone or via the email or text or whatever it may happen to be. So when it comes to heavy remodeling, I'll let you use your definition of what heavy remodeling may be. It sort of reminds me of somebody says that roughing it is arriving at Holiday Inn without a reservation. And if you happen to be a backpacker or something, roughing does not entail that type of commitment at all. So one of the things on remodeling, depending upon how extensive it's going to be, is that there should be some sort of design or architectural or a draft design of what you want would like to try to accomplish. And along with that, the person that's requesting the RFQ, request for a quotation, should know a lot about what the elevations are going to be, what the construction details are they're looking for, what type of floor plan they want, whether it's a bathroom or whether it's going to be a kitchen or whether it's in the entire house structure, so on and so forth. And that becomes very, very important. If you do hire a draftsman or a designer or a contractor to draw up your plans, which is an excellent way of doing it, as well as an architect, the drawings are normally set up to be for every foot, it's 1/4 inch on the drawing. And from our standpoint, as a designer of what accessories you're going to need, such as cabinetry and countertops, we'd like to have just a basic floor plan. We don't care about the plumbing. We don't care about the electrical, the air conditioning, HVAC systems, and all that sort of thing. But we need to be able to utilize the floor plan drawing on where your kitchen or where your cabinets are going to be installed in your home. Even though we can pick off work from the drawing, because most of the time we have to do that, because of the way the dimensions are laid out on the drawing itself as far as the floor plan goes. With that being in mind, they're normally 1/4 inch equals 1 foot. However, that should never be used to solidify a contract for purchasing the equipment that you may need, such as cabinetry, etc. You can approximate things, but I can tell you from the construction standpoint, and nothing against the good contractors that do great work, is that lumber and everything moves, and things do not get laid appropriately, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I can go through some horror stories from that standpoint and share that with you sometime down the line. So this will give everybody that you need to submit these plans to. And remember, it's not only going to be one set of plans, but the plumber will need a set of plans, the roofer will need a plan, the framers will need a plan. So you may have 8, 9, 10 rolls of plans that cover all the areas. But as far as we as designers go, all we need is your floor plan, and that'll give us a rough idea on what the size of the areas that you are going to employ cabinetry. So depending upon your structure, one of the plans will be the entire structural of your operation. And those are what are considered sometimes an engineered set of plans. Now, as far as your work goes on your own home, the plumbing and HVAC systems will have to be accomplished by a registered engineer on behalf of the state in order to certify that the things are done appropriately. If this is brand new construction, as an example, you'll have to have a topographical mapping system, and we'll have to know the grade of the land that you're going to put your home on, or building, or guest house, or garage, or whatever it happens to be. And that'll have to be graded from that standpoint. Many lots are very tricky, especially in the foothills area or around our hilly mountainous region, so to speak, and that can become very expensive, is prepping your land and making sure it's solid enough in order to put your foundation in accordingly. Specifications. And by specifications, on your plans will also be someplace that'll say what the wall structures will be, 2x4s, 2x6s, either brick wall, brick veneered, et cetera. It could be a rammed earth. Lots of different wall structures are available. So the plans will dictate that. And you should be aware to know what you need to request from your person that you're going to use for your request for quotation. And there may be two or three or four people, depending upon how extensive you want to get involved. You should also ask about the scope of the work. What do you want your supplier or trade to bid on? What type of information do you want associated with that? What safety gear is going to be required? Remember, there is an organization called OSHA, O-S-H-A, which dictates what the supplier of all these items need to have as far as providing safety for the consumer that is requesting a bid on their project. So that's going to be important. Is the person that you are working with going to supply you with spreadsheets or things of that nature, or templates on what things are going to look like? The format should make it easier for them to complete, as well as easier for you to analyze the quotes from multiple bidders. And having one person bid against another, there is nothing wrong with that. If you do know a good person that you're satisfied with, that's excellent. But again, you should have all these bases covered from that standpoint. Another thing that's coming up may be a statement of intent. And, of course, this mainly should include a summary statement about your expectations, such as to identify the quality and the safety consciousness electrical contractor that can meet, and your schedule requirement and your cost requirement. So don't be afraid to figure out what your cost requirement is going to be. And if you don't have any idea, that's fine. You can research the web, maybe come up with some ideas, or through multiple bids, you'll be able to figure out what your cost criteria are going to be. I can say from a standpoint of being a provider of cabinetry that rarely when a customer comes in and tells us what their budget is, the items that they're requesting, which is okay, but it normally always exceeds the cost that they think they ought to be paying for of the cabinetry or the countertop from that standpoint. Not uncommon unless you're in the business and know exactly the way things are. What is your company's biography? And what we mean by that is, how long have they been in business? Are they a registered contractor? Are all the things being done appropriate from a safety standpoint? Et cetera, et cetera. Forecasts of what may take place, forecasts about the details, knowing about your project size, the phase releases. There's also going to be a monetary transactions that may continue throughout the project. I do know that one contractor said he doesn't expect anything up front, but at each inspection, and once the inspection is passed, he expects to have the complete items that were inspected completely paid for. I thought that was a very good project, not necessarily project, but good procedure from that standpoint. So what are your schedules? And there should be some time period in there that allows some flexibility. What about rain? What about snow? Not too much in the Tucson area, but those things can deter. What about the factories providing the material in the appropriate time? And believe me, folks, being in business as long as we have and knowing when things are going to arrive and the routes that the truckers have to take due to inclement weathers in various parts of the country, one doesn't know. So don't crimp your style as far as that goes from that standpoint. Your contact list. So the bidder on your project should provide you various contacts, emergency contacts as well as daily contacts, and et cetera. Also remember that many contractors that you're going to come in contact with have a family, and they may not want to be called in the evening and talk to them directly. So you may have to leave them a message, and if it's an emergency, they'll probably get back to you as soon as they can from that standpoint. So contact lists are very important in various aspects. So keep that in mind. Well, we're coming to the end of the program. I'll continue the rest of this next week. Well, not next week, but a couple of weeks or a week after that. I will be gone for the next week. We will have a guest a guest provider. That'll be J.D. Strang from your Tucson Painter. He's been at the show before. He's been one of the initial members of it, and he will be the host for you next week. Folks, have a great week, and we'll see you the week after that. Thank you for listening today.